Essentially, since I walked on the scene in 2013 after graduating from Northwestern, I had identified that I think one major problem, one thing that's missing, is that startup companies don't have great access to the large companies that they can either partner with or become an acquired partner of or become acquired in any sense, sort of like our keynote Coco Mears was with Pretty Quick and Groupon last month. The other side of this coin, however, is that those companies are sometimes out of touch. And how do they get involved in the community of startups and know what the cutting edge of the new trends are going to be? One of the companies that's doing this in an amazing way, it's actually two companies, is Founder Equity and Digital Intent. I brought its partner and a fellow teacher at Northwestern, Sean Johnson, in studio. I'm Scott Catoon, and this is TechNorry Live. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So as I said to you before the show, this is sort of like my main thing that I wanted to launch right out of undergrad, was this seeing that there's a niche there. There's a spot where startup companies can bring immediate value to large corporations, and large corporations in turn can bring an immediate opportunity to startup companies. It seems like you guys have figured that out. If you could sort of give us sort of the top down on how you saw this vision, what is the...
Yeah, so honestly, we stumbled into it. We were startup guys by background, and we started a technology company that originally was helping startups in town kind of realize their vision that way. And something happened 3 or 4 years ago where these larger organizations started approaching us. And I think that they started reading the same books that the startup community was reading, Lean Startup, those kinds of things. And they started having the same conversations, and they started standing up these innovation groups. And we realized that a lot of the processes around staying lean, around kind of growth accounting, around all that kind of stuff are just as applicable for these larger organizations. And so that ended up kind of becoming sort of the bulk of our revenue. And it was sort of a nice symbiosis. When we stood up the fund, the majority of the investments that we're making, their end game is strategic acquisition. And so we had, on the one hand, in the digital intent side, we had these large Fortune 500 clients that a part of their portfolio from innovation perspective is building, but a part of it is, like you said, is buying. And so we had some natural entrees for them. And then likewise, by investing in these companies and having a lot of deal flow, we were exposed to a lot of technologies pretty early kind of in their life cycle that we could then go and take back to these larger organizations and help them explore how that might fit inside of their business.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, I before we get into some of the cool things you guys are working on, I want to nerd out a little bit here on sort of the minutia of how you run a business like this.
Yeah.
So like the place that I ran into trouble, I wouldn't say trouble, but it was just became like, oh man, this is a much bigger thing than I thought it was going to be, is in that due diligence side. And obviously you guys kind of took care of that with Founder Equity, and you've sort of decided, all right, we're going to invest in these companies on our own, or we're going to, however you guys want your relationship to be described, we're going to bring these companies in, the startup companies in on our own. What I ended up finding was troubling was I didn't have the team and the support and the infrastructure to be able to go, okay, so I'm meeting with a large corporation, A, and they say, we're looking for this kind of technology. We'll talk about chatbots later. So we'll use that as an example.
Yeah.
We're looking for companies in the chatbot space to either help us build this or to maybe become an acquisition target or whatever. And I didn't have the ability to go back and look at every single chatbot company and do due diligence on them to a degree where I felt comfortable going back to now a trusted client who pays my bills and hand them somebody who could ultimately blow up, you know, in my face.
Yeah.
And so how did you guys manage, you know, obviously it sounds like you started on the tech side. How did you manage that process of, you know, it's literally two different industries. I mean, they seem like the same, but, you know, they're not.
With difficulty. You know, we have three partners in the business and the way, or in the businesses rather, and the way that it's sort of broken down is one of my partners, Joe Dwyer, is primarily operating inside of the fund. And so that involves fundraising, that involves diligence, that involves monitoring, and he's got an apparatus underneath him. That's gotten progressively better, I think, over time in terms of how we vet deals. And then Matt and myself, for the most part, operate inside of Digital Intent. And we similarly have a product strategy function. So the companies, we've got about 50 people. Half of them are engineers, or a little bit more than half of them engineers. But we do have kind of a product strategy piece. And part of that, when we start a new client engagement with these larger firms, is competitive research. And so the product strategy folks actually sit very closely to the diligence folks, and they're sharing a lot of notes and all that kind of thing. And that's sort of how we've been able to kind of have sort of a broad sort of canvas of industries and of startups that are kind of coming up, identify trends. We do a lot of teardowns of the products themselves in terms of identifying what works and what doesn't kind of within a given space at a very sort of tactical level. And so that's sort of how we've done it. But again, honestly, it was organic. And like you said, it is definitely a tricky thing. I think that when we started, we had three partners that were all doing everything together. And that's not a great way of running a business.
Well, you mentioned Joe Dwyer. I've literally have like three different introductions to him, and we've been trying to get a meeting in the books. You should have brought him with. We could have just knocked out two birds.
He's the smart one. So, you know, I'm the weak link. So,
so he just sends you out to talk to me. That's great. Exactly. I'll bring that up next time I talk to Joe. That's wonderful. No, I'm just kidding. But in all reality, I think to your point, you know, you guys have found a way to maybe systematically approach this. Mm-hmm. But I think any company that would try to do it like this would probably find that they also will have to systematically do it, but it will be completely different than yours because you've got to sort of take into like what your assets are and what your strengths are, what you see before, you know, that you attack what you see first.
That's actually one of the things that you're right. We have been, for the majority of the company's history, a very personality driven organization. And that's been good in a lot of ways. There's some unique skills that each of us sort of bring to the table and that our team members bring to the table that can be hard to replicate. We are in the process of, and have been in the process for probably the last year or so, of figuring out, okay, how do we replicate that? Yeah. Because we can't, we will reach a terminus point in terms of the size which we can grow if we're relying on me, for example, to be doing the things that I'm currently doing. And it's tough because we're operators by background, we're startup guys by background, and we love that stuff.
That's the part that killed me because I'm very similar. The approach was I would look for, so slightly different from the way you guys did, but my approach, I would look for market opportunities. I would specifically find a small niche area where I thought, you know what? There's probably not a huge amount of companies trying to serve this area. I found one solution that this business in particular would find highly valuable. Mm-hmm. And if I could put the two in a room and sort of figure out how do we solve your problem, ultimately the buffet, if you will, of options becomes buy me, help me, you know, invest in me, or I just do a side product and build this for you. That's cash flow.
Sure.
And that would only work at a certain level. And you can only do it so many times stacked on top of each other. And as it got bigger, all of a sudden it was like, I can't hire five me's. I can't hire 50 me's. I can't train people to see what, you know, to stay up all night long because this little thing was bugging me.
Yep. Yeah. It's definitely hard. I think we've had some success.
I would say you've had more than some success.
Well, we forced ourselves. So a good example would be we have a growth team, and I think that we're pretty unique, at least in Chicago, in the sense that we have a growth team that works very, very closely with the product team, and that was something that we saw going on kind of in the valley, and there weren't a whole lot of people that were doing it, and we spent a couple of years basically doing a deep dive and figuring out as much as we could about how they structure those teams, what that process looks like. We actually have an event tonight at the offices for anybody that wants to come about how to build a growth machine. But we built a team largely around process and tools, and we made it relatively replicable, not in the sense that someone could come in a week be up to speed, because there's a lot to learn, SQL and paid acquisition and search engines and really just the process sort of in general. But we did figure out, I think, a relatively good process for that. And that team hums. That team runs very, very effectively. And we're trying to replicate that, I think, in the other parts of the business as well. But you're right. It's difficult. We were big fans of the book called The E-Myth. It's a 30-year-old book. And at first, we were like, you just can't do this. You can't do this with a services business.
That was the book we read at Northwest, and that was kind of one of the catalysts to like getting into this whole thing.
Yeah,
like,
and the whole idea was to build a business that can run theoretically without you. Not that you would need it to, but it was taking a lot of the pages from kind of the franchise model. In the beginning, we just thought, oh, you can't replicate it. You can't do a services business this way. Our work is highly custom, and every single project is unique, which is true. But there are a lot of kind of first principles, and there are a lot of processes, and there are a lot of tool sets that you can use. Even if the outputs and the inputs are completely different, you can put them through that machine and more predictably arrive at kind of a good outcome. And so that's what we've tried to focus our energy on, are those processes and tools. And on the hiring side, some certain competencies, certain people, if they have certain traits to them. So again, from the growth perspective, if you have strong curiosity, if you have a leaning towards data, is really helpful, and resourcefulness, where you can, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to go figure out. If that is your default makeup, we can teach you the skills. And so that's just one more example.
How I ended up sitting in a class or something with you or reach out to you before, and I'm not really sure. It's I literally, what we did was take the design thinking approach and say, okay, this is something that is that can be systematic. It's we have an approach that is sort of, it's design thinking with our own spin.
Yeah.
And then use leveraging networks and network dynamics to say, I know, you know, just like you just qualified, I know I need a connector. I know I need a person who's sort of that maven. I know I need this. And we could build a team for any industry. Because I knew that if you had my creative approach and you had sort of a more systematic engineering approach, if I slapped on the information brokers into my team every time, we essentially had the same talent pool every time. It was just different humans.
Yeah.
And it becomes interchangeable. And then literally it's like, all right, my next job is to find another person who has the same traits as me, not me, but similar traits. And then once they, you know, once you find them, they're not you, but they are similar.
Yeah.
You start stacking different parts around them. And that's essentially how we did it.
It sounds like you were a lot more deliberate about it than we were, but
well,
you know,
perhaps too deliberate because I took too much focus and interest in that and less so in the clients.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I think to your point about the clients though, I mean, that it's imperative that we do this, you know, these larger organizations, to the degree that we're building the solutions for them, which is a big part of what we do. I mean, we identify opportunities, we expose them to who the potential kind of acquisition targets might be, but very often they want to build. And so we have that apparatus to actually help them see these solutions exist in the world. We can design it, we can develop it, we can market it, all those kinds of things. But assuming that we can get it to a place where it is successful, their ultimate goal is to bring it in back to the mothership. And if we don't give them the right processes and tools where we can sort of teach them how we built the business apparatus to run and
it's
train their team. Yeah, exactly right.
This is that, and this is why you guys are so successful, and I, why I think this is such a great idea is the fact that operationally, it's not like, hey, we're a wizard group and we work on our things behind closed doors and then we just like throw a product out there.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't help
the
large company. That's why they don't work with these kind of teams. And the fact that you guys are building it in the same model essentially that they're, in fact, in a lot of cases, I'm sure you do the same as we did. I bring people on from their team onto our team so that we know that they can, when they get in trouble, which they will, I don't want that phone call.
Yeah. There's
you
a
guys
lot of,
take it.
Exactly. There's a lot of co-creation there. There's a lot of pragmatism that has to happen, which, you know, it's interesting from a hiring perspective. That's one of the challenges is that a lot of the people that we bring in come from a startup background and we have to teach them. There's a purity of thought that often happens inside of startups, which is great. And we don't want to snuff that out. But at the same time, there's a pragmatism of working with big co.
Ideology is good to a point.
Yeah.
And then it needs
simple example, you know, programming stacks. If you are, it's great that you love Python. If the company that we're working for is in the healthcare space and let's say they're a .NET shop, we need to build that stuff in .NET because otherwise they're not going to be able to take it over.
Sure.
And so we have to teach her. And it's true from a documentation perspective. It's true from how do you make sure that your code is readable and documented and uses as many of their practices as possible? How do you build tooling processes? How do you document from a growth perspective the tests that you've run and what's worked and what's not, and how do you train their team to take that on? All of that stuff is as important, if not more important, than the product itself, because otherwise, like you said, you hand it to them and the likelihood of it being successful once they bring it to the mothership is mitigated severely.
Well, it's like I said in numerous shows. I don't think I've said it in a couple of shows, so I can say it again now. Innovation is ideation and execution.
Absolutely.
Without it, you've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No execution and innovation, you just got ideation.
Absolutely.
So enough beating up on the companies and things, but what are some of the creative things that you're seeing right now? What are some of the main trends that you're seeing that you guys are spotting and looking for, whether it's from just because you guys are jazzed about it or it's because it's an opportunity that you'd like to see more companies come to you with?
Yeah, I think there's three things that we're pretty interested in. One is sort of the chatbot stuff, which is part of a larger kind of idea of really what's exciting about that is kind of the machine learning bit.
Sure.
The chatbots that are out there are still early, but just in the short time, we've built several of them ourselves and for clients. One of the things that's really actually interesting or most interesting to us about that is using those tools to automate internal processes. So you have a sales team. Sales team has a weekly meeting. Rather than having that person whose job it is to go into Salesforce and pull out the 10 reports that you need, Salesforce has an API. Why not have a bot that programmatically pulls those reports 30 minutes before that meeting so everybody's briefed and up to speed, can make your team a lot more efficient? So we've built tools like that. We've built tools for kind of tracking time. We're exploring tools around kind of expense tracking and reimbursement, things like that. So how can you leverage kind of machine learning and artificial intelligence and just sort of automated processes to fit more into the work lives of your team? Many of our clients use Slack. We use Slack ourselves. Every time they have to leave and log into yet another tool, yeah, is kind of annoying for them. And so how can we do that? So that's one that we're pretty excited about. The IoT stuff is super interesting to us, with manufacturing companies, with distribution companies, with logistics companies around, and even healthcare companies. How do you, we're reaching a point where a lot of the use cases, at least for a mobile device, have been sort of discovered, and you can sort of do micro innovations on top of that. But a whole world gets opened up to you once you're able to augment that device, yeah, with sensors, right? And so that's one that we're really excited about. And then I think the third is kind of similar. It's sort of mobile tools for workforce efficiency improvements. So the average user is downloading 0 new apps per month now. And so demand from a consumer perspective for new mobile apps is largely calcified. If you can create a truly novel, disruptive business, obviously you have a high likelihood of kind of, yeah, breaking through that noise. But
which is the case, and I mean, forever for anything, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you've got the next Tesla,
yes,
okay, fine.
Yes. But largely speaking, most folks aren't downloading a whole lot of new apps. Where there is a big opportunity, though, is to help organizations of any size, but I think definitely mid-size to large organizations, improve. A lot of them have distributed workforces now. How do we improve their efficiency? How do we equip them with tools to kind of be more effective? And again, a lot of that stuff is how do you more fully leverage the tools they're already using? So Salesforce or an SAP or a Workday or those kinds of tools. That already is their system of record for whatever domain is important to them. And they all have APIs that you can tap into. So you're not having to necessarily reinvent the wheel. You can use your insights from a consumer interface perspective to build elegant applications that do a job very effectively, probably more effectively than those tools might, but still kind of connect to those systems from a data perspective, the net result of which is it's making your distributed team much, much more effective. So those are three of the things that we're pretty excited about.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously would agree with you 100%. I mean, a lot of the companies that I've spoken to, whether it's on the show or through business, has been, how do we use and use the tools we pay for? Most of them have subscriptions,
yes,
across the gamut of things.
Yes.
Whether it's manufacturing or whatever the story.
Yes.
And they don't use them properly. In a lot of cases, it's just reports that just run and no one has any use case for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the tools that can, yeah, bind that system or that data gathering platform with what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And interoperability, I think, is a huge issue for these larger,
sure,
organizations. They've needed tools to do certain things and to solve certain use cases, and they've built them, and that's good, but it's created a situation where, in spite of the fact that we have all of these open platforms now, they have all of these disparate systems that aren't talking to each other. And so I think that a big kind of opportunity for organizations that are trying to serve those kinds of companies is exactly what you said. How do you help us more effectively maximize the tools that we're already using? And that doesn't mean that you're not building custom solutions for them, but it does mean that the data that is being created, the data that's coming both in and out of those systems, should ultimately reside in some of the systems that they're already using. And that'll just help them from a maintainability perspective and from a kind of long-term efficiency perspective. It'll make their CIO, their CTO's headaches largely go away while still kind of accomplishing the business objective that you're trying to accomplish.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of these companies that we're talking about, for the most part, I mean, you look at the collection platform, let's say Oracle, for example, mm-hmm, is built, and Oracle's a great product, but, yep, it's built sort of like pretty linear. Mm-hmm. There's like, this is how it's used, and, mm-hmm, you can choose to use as many verticals of it if you want to, yep, but it's essentially, this is the platform. And most businesses, particularly small businesses, don't operate that way.
Right.
They have sort of their custom family style that has morphed into whatever hiring kind of system they took on.
Yep.
And now it's like, well, this is, you know, yep, we can use 1/5 of what we're paying for.
Right.
And
exactly.
You guys can bring in a tool that says, all right, maybe you could use 95% of what you're paying for or more and get more value than what you're paying for.
Yeah. And I think it gets back to the pragmatism thing, avoiding, you know, I think there's a lot of folks out there that'll say that a tool like a Salesforce or a tool like an Oracle, or in the healthcare space, there's a lot of EMR,
yep,
integration stuff. So a tool like Epic is frustrating to use and all those kinds of things. And that's true. In many cases, but that doesn't the likelihood that you're going to help a company achieve their objectives by going in and having a position of you need to strip this out and replace it with something else, or to build a tool that doesn't talk to it.
Them.
No, not at all. Yeah. And so again, kind of getting back to the pragmatism thing, it's like everything that we do is designed around what is the outcome that we're trying to accomplish for the business. And success for us does not look like launched on time and on budget. It doesn't look like that we won design awards or anything like that. We're fundamentally business people at heart. And so we're using technology to accomplish business objectives for them. And so that's one piece of that is how do we make sure that we can get as much juice out of the lemon that is the tools that they already have?
Well, I think project, no brainer, obviously you guys could do some great projects for companies.
Sure.
But I think that the companies would gain a lot just simply by giving you a call and talking to you about how they could just give me some ideation on how we could do better with this. And I'm sure that you guys can build solutions that would be incredible for them. So how do you, these companies get in touch with you, and how do companies, startups and people, how do people find Founder Equity, and how do they find Digital Intent?
Sure. So you can, for both of them, you could email me, just Sean@digintent.com. You can tweet me at intentionally. Depending on, you know, if you're looking for investment inside of Founder Equity.
Your Twitter handle is intentionally?
Yes.
How in the hell did you get that?
You know, we jump on things relatively early.
Wow.
But yeah, no, that's
congratulations. That's a great find.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're interested in investment, I'll route you to our diligence folks, and they'll have a lot of questions that they'll ask you. From a services perspective, yeah, you're absolutely right. Most of our engagements with these larger organizations start that way. They start with us coming in and trying to help them kind of understand what's going on out there, help us understand kind of what's going on in there, and then we kind of come back to them with, we're big fans of this idea of kind of a portfolio of innovation. Again, this takes a page from venture, which is
total innovation. You got to have a little bit of acquired, you got to have a little bit of what do you call it, the consistent sort of flow and the big idea.
And for the new stuff especially, if you hedge all of, if you put all your eggs into one initiative and it succeeds or fails, and you base innovation inside of a new innovation, wouldn't work, because that's asking for failure. What we advocate is taking a page from venture, which says, let's make a lot of small bets in initiatives. And you don't have to put seven figures into an initiative. You can put a very relatively small amount of money into an initiative and find out if there's something there really quickly, just like startups do, and let those initiatives earn the right for additional resources. And so we come in and we don't say, hey, this is the perfect solution for you. We come in and say, here are a variety of solutions vetted by customers or your internal team. And let's try to prioritize these and see how many you guys can execute on yourselves. If we can add value, let's help you execute on some of those things. But use relatively rigorous kind of innovation accounting to say, this is working or this isn't working. Kill the ideas early that aren't working, and then double down on the ones that are.
Yeah.
So
great advice. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Today we announced the theme for the next Technori, the August Technori Showcase. It is going to be Wearable Works. So if you are a company or you are a person who's interested in wearables or connected technology or data-driven technology as a whole, you can go to technori.com and find your way to the ticket and or application page. Application for companies who want to present will be ending Monday night, the 8th of August. So do get on that. Early bird specials on the ticket prices are available now until the end of this week. So again, get on that. You can stream this episode and more on WJMBusiness.com or download each episode on iTunes, and stay up to date by following us on Facebook and Twitter @Technori, or you can follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.